Welcome to The Summit, a podcast focused on bringing you the knowledge and insights for industry leaders. I'm your host, Kyle Hamer, and I'm on a mission to help you exceed your potential. As a sales guy turned marketer, I am passionate about building sustainable businesses. And if there's one thing I've learned in my 20-year career, it's that you won't find an overnight growth scheme, a shortcut to success, or a way to hack yourself to the top. Nope. Success is the byproduct of hard work, great relationships, and deep understanding done over and over. We're here to help you unlock that success with some secrets from other people, one conversation at a time.
Today's guest on the show, The Summit, is Lauren Meyer. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kyle. Thanks. Happy to be here.
We're excited to have you here. Now, for those of you who don't know Lauren, she's an email savant. Her career has put her in a place that has taken her on this great adventure. She works for a company named Kickbox now. She's had a chance to travel all over the world and knows email inside and out. She's a recent California transplant from New York City, but she does have Midwest or at least Rust Belt roots coming out of Pennsylvania, and has a passion for pizza. So did I miss anything, Lauren?
I think that pretty much covers it. I guess maybe I'll just mention that I've got 2-year-old twins at home too. So when I'm not focusing on email, which feels like all of the time, I eat, sleep, and dream email. I'm chasing 2-year-olds around. Yeah.
That's awesome. Now give us like the 30-second to 1-minute overview of what Kickbox is for those people who are like, okay, I've never heard of Kickbox unless, you know, it's like an MMA thing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And we do not do MMA. We are not a kickboxing company. We actually are an email verification. Well, let's say we've been an email verification company for several years and focusing on really just helping customers improve the quality of their lists by kicking out invalid addresses. We have a really cool sign up form that you can use. Well, not a sign up form, but the ability to plug real-time verification into your sign up forms. So figure instead of somebody kind of mistaking Gmail and typing the wrong thing, and then you not being able to connect with that future customer, giving them the ability to make sure that they enter a correct address at the point of sign up. So that's what we've been doing for many years. And then over the summer, we actually introduced an entire deliverability monitoring suite that is focused on really just helping people understand, are they going to the inbox? If they're not going to the inbox, potentially why, and giving them lots of tools and different data points to help them kind of troubleshoot those issues and really just optimize their email.
Cool. Well, look, if you're somebody who's ever had to try and figure out how to do email verification through a third-party service, whether it's an API call or trying to do it through webhooks, the whole entire thing can be a giant pain in the butt. So I think you guys have found a place to make life a little bit easier.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, our product's pretty intuitive. I mean, honestly, you can just kind of drag and drop, you know, a file if you've got an existing file. But really, I love that real-time verification aspect, which does include setting up an API. And I know some people are a little bit afraid of even just that, like, what is API even stand for? Oh, gosh, I don't want to think about that. But once you plug it in, it's really simple and it really works very well.
That's awesome. Well, as you could probably imagine listening in, today we're going to talk about email. But what we're going to talk about as it relates to email is how pretty much everything you know about email is wrong. And people are like, wait, what? How do you mean what I know about email is wrong? What I would say is that there's as much misinformation in the market today about email as there is about the benefits of hair growth serum. There's just a lot of bad information. And so we've got Lauren on the show today to kind of help us clear up some of the misconceptions. But before we get into like what the misconceptions are, Lauren, kind of give us the state of the world. Like, what is going on in the world of email? Why is this all of a sudden an important topic?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know we're saving misconceptions for later, but I guess I'll break the news that email is not dead. In fact, email is doing better than ever. And, you know, I think for many years, the ROI from email tends to average around 42 US dollars to $1 spent on email. So 42 to 1, pretty awesome results there. But I think, you know, even just this year, we have seen so many people shifting to focusing more on e-commerce or the digital experience because their brick and mortar stores have been closed, or they're, you know, trying to announce store closings or changes in hours or the way that they're kind of trying to help customers through this pandemic. So I think it's just, you know, we've got people that are kind of starting email marketing for the first time that are shifting much more heavily into it. You know, we've got, yeah, lots of volume changes. So there's certain industries, you know, like obviously travel has taken a big hit. So travel has kind of had to figure out what to do. So some travel companies, honestly, paused sending back in March and just said, we're not going to send email for a while. We'll just kind of lay low, which, you know, is not the greatest thing to do. You still want to have kind of some kind of, you know, relevance in the market and kind of, you know, remind customers of who you are and the fact that you still exist. But I think, yeah, we've seen a lot of shifts, but really, yeah, people are just relying on email much more heavily than I think they ever have in the past, which is kind of exciting.
It is exciting. I mean, it's exciting because if you think about the volume of email that comes out per day, and then you talk about a 42-to-1, so $42 for every dollar spent turned around, it's amazing to think about the volume that's going on. I was reading somewhere that there's roughly about 300 billion emails sent a day. Has that changed dramatically since the pandemic?
You know, I actually don't think it has. You know, I've got a lot of contacts who work at ESPs, and overall, like the overall global volume that's being sent from email hasn't changed much, but I think that's because we do see that variance where there's some people that are sending a lot more than they used to, but others that aren't. So overall, things have remained pretty stable. I think it's just when you actually get down to the individual sender level that you see so much, you know, variety versus what's been happening in the past. You know, we have seen some trends where open rates have actually been up quite a bit. I think they probably peaked back in kind of like mid-March or let's say mid-April. But those are still higher than they were. I think some people are reporting, you know, as high as, you know, 20% more than they were at the same period last year. So open rates are up, but click-through rates, conversions seem to be kind of about where they were last year. So that's something that's kind of interesting where it's like people are, they seem to have like a greater appetite for email, but it hasn't really changed their, you know, kind of spending habits too much in that sense. So a little bit interesting there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. Cause that is very interesting. If you think about, you know, the shift in the workforce and the things that have happened this year with right. People being forced to work from home. I can't, you know, I've got to be in front of my email box. I've got to have it open more consistently in addition to Slack and Teams and whatever else I've got going on. The open rate's moving up, but people's click-through rates not changing or not improving. What do you think is you've been doing this for years. So what do you think are the common challenges folks what are they getting wrong? Like, why is it, we're not seeing that with similar trends?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really is just, you know, this year has been so insane. I mean, it really, you know, there's certain people that are kind of saying you should, you know, throw your marketing playbook out the window because whatever you've been doing in the past is just not going to work this year. I don't think it's that dramatic, but really, you know, we've seen some people that are really doing well when they're very empathetic in the emails that they send. They're really providing value. Like every email that they send has some clear value for their recipient. Others are not. I think there was a period where it felt like almost every other email that you received was from some CEO, and it was sort of some of them were really well done, and others were just clear virtue signaling, and they kind of just fell flat, and they were really kind of, you know, lambs to the slaughter, if you will, because people were just like, what's going on with this? This is not good email. And so I think it's just, you know, it's a matter of people's interest is still there, but some people are facing, you know, that they don't have a job. So their budget is different than it was in past years. So it's like, I still like this brand. I still like these products. I'm still interested. I just can't buy it right now. So they're still engaging with the emails. It really just depends on what kind of email you're sending, right? So I think that's where, you know, e-commerce is one aspect of the market, but you know, if you're in B2B and you've got that long sales cycle and you're really kind of trying to focus on eventually getting that person to convert to a customer, that looks very different, you know? So I think it really depends on kind of what your goals are, but I think that really is just the thing. People are home more. They've got some people have a little bit more time on their hands. Others, I think that, you know, their consumption of email has changed, but they still do have a very finite time in their day where they're like, hey, I'm still looking at emails, right? They're still doing that. I think they just, that they're doing a little bit more, but that conversion rate, the amount of money they have to spend on something, you know, it hasn't really gone up. So conversions are not up.
Well, it's interesting because you talked about virtue signaling. And one of the things that I've been traipsing around LinkedIn battle crying against is the loss of humanity in the email. Like it's almost like companies forget how to be creative, forget how to talk conversationally, forget how to appeal to somebody via written form. And we've turned email into this, this medium that's basically another billboard. And what I'm interested in is what you're seeing or what you've seen be successful for different groups and different industries, whether it's e-commerce or B2B, in driving up improved click rates or engagements rates. Even if I don't have the dollars today, what's going to force me to start, you know, encourage me to take that next step? Are there techniques or things that people aren't considering?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those, you know, we've been all talking about big data for so long and people are collecting all these data points. But I think it's to the point where like they have so much data, but they don't really know what they should be looking at within that data. And so they don't look at anything, right? So I think it's just this kind of overkill of like, okay, well, I don't know what to do. And so you kind of just rely on what worked in the past. And so the companies that are excelling, especially this year, when consumption has changed within their subscriber base, it's really just following the data and learning from what you're seeing, right? Like if you have a welcome series, for example, and you start to see that there's like a lot of churn on your list after, I don't know, the third email that you send, dig into that, figure out what's going on there, right? Is there something with the content? Is it something with, I don't know, how quickly you sent that? Is there something wrong with that process that you can do to kind of improve it? And so I think the companies that are doing well are really kind of tweaking things, looking again to see like, you know, it's not, you know, email, subscriber interests, deliverability, none of that stuff is a constant. It does change all the time. We've even seen reports where, you know, I think maybe it was Deliquist who was talking about this recently, just seeing where there's certain subscribers who might go from being super active on your list to kind of just falling off and not really opening emails for quite a while. Then all of a sudden they kind of just, they open one and then they fall right back into your engaged segment again and they become a regular subscriber again, right? So I think it's just a matter of watching those trends and acting accordingly, right? Like I can't stand it when there's those companies that just, they target everybody in their list the same way. They just send to them, I don't know, daily or weekly or whatever their frequency is. And then at some point they kind of just drop them off the list and say, well, they're inactive, they're gone, bye-bye, right? I really prefer, and I think this is what's really great about some companies and that are succeeding is following that data and having different kind of customer profiles within your list. So you can kind of say, hey, here's my active group. Here's my group that I'm looking to try to get to purchase for the first time. Here's my recurring purchasers, things like that. And you know, you're just targeting them a little bit differently and understanding that those things can change, right? Business as usual is not really business as usual. So I think that the companies that get that, it's not something you have to do every single day. You don't always have to be looking at your data in that sense, but at least once a month or once a quarter, step back and say, like, are we doing the right thing? Is what we're doing making sense? And are there places within the data that tell us that there's something that's wrong?
Well, okay. So you've talked about data a couple of times. And I think for a lot of organizations, they get caught up in the vanity metrics. What was my send? How many names are on my list? How many sends did I do today? What was my deliverability? What was my open rate? Getting beyond the vanity metrics that we all know, how do you really dig into your email and the information that's there to deduce what's working and what's not working to the degree you're talking to? Because it's really easy to look at the vanity metrics and be like, everything looks fine.
Yeah.
How do you take it to the next step and get to what you're talking about?
For sure. So I think, you know, the one thing is really to look at your performance over time, right? Don't just look at that standalone campaign and be like, woohoo, we had a great sales day and our opens were the highest they've been in, you know, like, don't be like, oh yeah, today 35% open rate. If your typical open rate is 20%, right? Like look at that trend and see, are we trending up? Are we staying consistent or are we trending downwards over time? Is there a huge area where you can just fall off a cliff at some point, right? Because I think all of those things are really important to look at. But it's also like, look at all of your metrics, right? Because it's a journey, right? There's, you know, figure, you know, somebody can't open something if it doesn't go to their inbox, if it's not delivered to their address in the first place, right? So cool, you got them to, you got the address delivered, that's awesome. Then you got them to open, that's great. Now you need to focus on getting them to click through your email and eventually land on your website or take whatever that call to action is that you're looking at. But ultimately, I mean, email's whole goal is to drive your business forward in some way, is it not, right? Like it's not just to get lots of opens, that sounds great. But again, to your point, that's a vanity metric because if people are just opening, that doesn't mean that they're ever going to actually help your bottom line for your business. So I think it's just really tying your business metrics, your conversions, even just website visits, right? If you can see that when you send an email, even if people aren't opening or clicking, if you see a spike in website traffic shortly after that, or if you see that your sales on your website are higher that day or something like that, if you can see indications of kind of like that butterfly effect, I think that's the bigger thing to look at is you know, don't just get stuck in that box of woohoo, lots of opens, lots of clicks, because if those aren't generating actual money for your business, then you're doing something wrong. So I think it's just a matter of kind of putting that whole picture together and saying, is this working? And trace that back, like really check that against your goals with email, right? If your goal with email is literally just to kind of get brand visibility out there, okay, that's a little bit harder to track. But if it truly is, we're a retail business, we have a sale today, we want to generate as many sales as possible, you know, that's pretty easy for you to kind of tell, you know, what you're doing there. So I think it really is just a matter of looking at the bigger picture and really trying to adjust accordingly.
Sure, makes perfect sense. Now, there are a couple things that as we, you know, we listen to you dropping nuggets here and I picked up on. One of the things that you said is, you know, it drives you crazy when people are like, hey, you haven't engaged for 4 emails. I'm going to move you to the, you know, dead list, never talk to you again, bye now. Right. And that's not really actually a best practice. How do you know that that's not a best practice? And what are some of the ways in which an organization can be effective in not wearing out their welcome, but also making sure that they're, you know, being timely?
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, it's one of those, it's so tricky because, you know, the frequency at which you send to your audience is really dependent on the business and the content of your emails and the goals of your emails and the audience that you're sending to, right? If you do have that audience that's opening and clicking and doing things very often, and maybe you know that they've already taken or made purchases with your business, a loyal customer, let's say, you might treat them very differently from somebody who's just recently signed up, right? You want to kind of welcome them and really get them to be a loyal subscriber. So I think it really is, you have to kind of look into your data again and really try to kind of focus on the difference between those subscribers. I think it's really important to kind of just focus on whatever data points you have access to, right? Because in B2B, let's say, for example, there are a lot of issues where, you know, sometimes you can't register an open, right? You might have open tracking in place, but for whatever reason, the open is not showing up, right? The click is not showing up. It's possible that you don't know that that's an active person. So that's where you really need to look outside of those email metrics to be able to understand what those people are doing. And sometimes you just need to take that leap of faith, right? And say, okay, well, let's send to those inactives once in a while and let's see what happens. Does that generate some kind of activity on the website that you can track somewhere else, something like that? It's difficult. But I think that's just, you almost need to put yourself in the shoes of your recipients and say, like, is this an email that I would want to receive? You know, and really when you're doing that, not just be yourself, try to put on that persona of that buyer, right? If they are somebody who's buying from you every single week, do they need an email from you every day? I don't know. Let's say on the other side, if you've got like somebody who's buying a car, don't send them stuff to buy a new car like a week or a month or a year later. Maybe send them things that tell them how they can maintain the car that they just purchased, right? Or something like that. So it's really just knowing the audience, knowing the intent, knowing the reason that they would want to engage with your brand. And then kind of, taking that leap of faith to really, you know, figure out what the best way forward is.
So I hear this debate often, and I'm hoping that maybe you can provide clarity because I heard you allude to it, but without actually getting into it. What's the difference between a nurture campaign and a drip campaign?
Ooh, okay. Yeah. And this is, you know, it's funny because in deliverability, I am often talking about the difference between a delivery rate and a deliverability rate because those are very different things. And I feel like this is sort of a same kind of debate where it's like people often interchangeably use drip campaign, nurture campaign to be the same thing, like they are the same thing. For me, I would say the difference, and I'm curious to hear what your answer to this is, but I would say for me, a drip campaign is time-based. So it's, you know, somebody signs up, they're a new customer or they, you know, sign up to your list. And so they get that welcome email. And then 2 days later, they get something else that says, hey, here's some, some features about my products, or you're a new customer, so let me walk you through how to use certain things or how to set up your profile or, you know, things like that, right? So you're introducing them to your brand and helping them along the way. Whereas I see the nurture campaign as more behavior-based. So, visually, maybe this looks more like a decision tree where it's not just like boom, 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 you get an email on X day. It's like, well, did you open that first email? If yes, send them this one 2 days later. If no, send them this one day later. And then if they do this, and so it kind of gets a little bit more complex. But the idea there, I think, is really to nurture them into, okay, we can see where you're going. We can see the links that you're clicking on. You like our thought leadership type of content as opposed to just pure sales stuff. So it's taking you down that path of trying to improve your segmentation. Drip campaign, I don't think it's nearly that intricate, I guess.
Well, okay. So first of all, thank you. In some of this, I agree. In some of it, I think the nuance for me is different.
Okay.
The way I define nurture, mm-hmm, is I want you to take a specific action, whether it's a specific action to buy, a specific action to go through an onboarding process, a specific action to learn something. Mm-hmm. I'm nurturing you to your point of a behavior modification. Sometimes that feels like it's a drip because it's time-based and it's like, hey, this week I'm teaching you about this new part of the product. Next week, I'm going to teach you about this part. But the point is I'm nurturing you to fall in love with the product and show you things that you've never had before, right? Some people call it onboarding, but the way that it's set up is a nurture campaign. At a certain point, I can't influence your behavior anymore, but I still want to stay in touch with you. And to me, that is the tickler or the drip, where it becomes at a certain period, there's a reason for me to reach out again. Hey, I just wanted to, hey, we've missed you. But it is that time-based piece. And for many organizations, what I heard you say earlier is be intentional. You're thinking about things only as nurture, only as nurture, only as nurture, and then you're dead to me. Mm-hmm. But the way that you keep them engaged might be just a time-based drip. Every 6 weeks, we just reach out and say, you should check this out. This is interesting. Or you should check that out. This is interesting. And you're fishing a little bit, but you're fishing at a time frame or at an interval that doesn't feel invasive, doesn't feel over the top, but still keeps you on the radar.
Yeah. I like that.
But, you know, I mean, that's how I define it with working with people. I think everybody, to your point, there's a tomato, tomato, potato, you know, what is it?
Yeah, right.
There's a bit of defining that. And I think it's really important that when organizations are setting up their emails, that they're defining what the difference is. Like that vocabulary is really important. Somebody says, oh, you just do a drip campaign. That means something totally different to organization A versus a drip campaign means it's something totally different for organization B. So I think it's important to have those defined internally.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, I think it's, you know, you talk about even just defining the terms and unfortunately that is so important with all of the stuff that we're doing, like where like, you know, you have that person who's like, oh, well, I thought you were talking about this, or I'm defining the click-through rate this way and you're defining it this other way or something like that, right? So it's super important, but I think even more so, it's like, you know, once you're getting into that, if you decide to do a drip campaign, look at all the steps and make sure that those make sense too, right? Because like, just because you're like, oh, cool, drip campaign, let's just go find one on the internet and pop it into our program. Like it really does need to make sense for, again, your goals with email and your subscribers.
So I'm going to ask a question about something that it's a load that I got to get off my chest. It is probably my single biggest pet peeve when it comes to email. Cold, outbound, unsolicited email. Now, I'm going to set this up with a couple of things. First of all, we know that there's an article put in, I think, Inc., where roughly 9% of spam ends up making it into people's inboxes.
Okay.
There's also additional statistics that show that if I reach out to you 7 times or more as a salesperson, I am more than likely going to be able to get a conversation, at least have a chat with you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
How can organizations use things like cold email? Well, first question is, should organizations use things like cold outbound email? Where does that fit in the world? Second thing is how can they use it so that it doesn't feel so spammy?
Yeah. You know, I'm torn. I work for a B2B business, right? And so I don't think my team is very, very much on the anti-abuse side. So we don't do a lot of spamming. We really work with inbound mostly, but I get it that businesses need to do outbound. And so it's just part of it. I think the key is, how do you identify with a cold email if the person actually is going to find value in whatever it is you are selling to them? The spray and pray technique has been done to death. I've worked with salespeople, even when I was working for an ESP that didn't allow cold emails to be sent on our platform, who were sending, you know, they're like, hey, I'm out of my credits for Zoom info or whatever else they're using. And they've sent to hundreds of people in a week with no segmentation, no idea truly if we are a good fit for them. So I think the key is, I mean, this is true for all email that you're sending, but especially for cold email, is provide value. Get your message out there quickly, right? Like, and I, you know, I saw something yesterday where somebody was like, don't apologize, right? Like, don't just say, hey, I'm bumping myself to the top of your inbox, or hey, sorry to bug you again or something. Like, just get to the point. Let me know what it is that you're offering that is so valuable to me that it's taking time away from everything else I'm doing in my day. So, you know, I think if you're sending, you know, so if you're, that stat that you shared is, what was it? Seven emails sent is when the conversation kind of changes, right? So, or more than seven emails? Is that what you said?
It's seven touches. You increase your likelihood of a conversation, I think, by 80%.
Okay. Yeah. So that makes sense. So figure it's, you know, you contact them on LinkedIn, you send them an email, you try to phone, you know, give them a phone call, whatever. But I think, you know, the emails that you send, shouldn't just be, hi, my name's Lauren, and here's why my business is the best and what you should do. It really is like, figure out what their actual pain points would be and then try to serve those. So if you're sending emails, you know, for example, if you've got somebody who's like a new hire, like you're like, hey, you're new to that organization. Maybe I can help provide information that's going to help you be better at getting up to speed in your new organization, or hiring new people for your team, or something related to that. You know, if it's just a matter of like, hey, I see that you're an email and this is what you do. No businesses like them, right? Like, so for me, one of my customer bases is ESPs. And so I've worked for ESPs. I know what they like. I know what they need. I know what their pain points are. So I shouldn't just send them an email that's like, hey, email verification, come check it out. I know what their actual goals are, where that fits into their business model and where it doesn't. So I think it's just a matter of kind of using your emotional intelligence and your business intelligence and just, yeah, finding the right angle, the right way to provide value and stop making it about you, right? It's not about you. It's about the recipient of the email and providing value to them.
All right. So I've got a cold email. We've scrubbed the names, but I do want to give a bit of context. This is sent from a male sales rep to a female practitioner. And I'm just interested to get your perspective on, is this good? Is this bad? Is this harassment? What is this cold email?
Okay.
So here's the email. I looked up your email and found out that your name means blooming in Greek and sometimes refers to the young green foliage or shoots of a plant in the spring. Very cool. Speaking of blooming foliage, hunter reps who use our product are weeding out data and planting seeds of opportunities in their pipeline. You could say that they have a garden full of budding revenue. Overall, our software cuts out administrative tasks for your reps so they can focus on revenue generating activities. Do you want to learn more about revenue in the same headcount? What it would look like? I'd like to plant a seed with you. Regards, sales rep.
Interesting. So I'm so curious because I'm wondering if you do have a name that's very interesting and kind of has like an origin to it. Like, is that something that you've been pitched to many, many times? I don't know, as if maybe somebody like, oh, that's so interesting that you looked up my name and you're trying to get personal. It's a little over the top cutesy for me because it kind of really plays hard into that, like planting the seed and, oh, letting it grow and all this stuff. So I think it's a little heavy handed. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with the fact that it's a male rep reaching out to a female. Like, I didn't see any real sexism or anything in there. I've definitely seen some that are just very much like, oh, you've got a beautiful profile pic. Let's do some business together, or weird things like that.
That's gross.
That's cringeworthy, right? So here, I don't see that. I think it's a little too over the top cutesy. It's kind of like, it doesn't, like, yes, you look me up. Yes, you know something about me. For me, I often get people who are like, hey, I see you love pepperoni pizza. Oh, you know, like, and my favorite type is this. And yes, I love pizza. So that's a good opener, but then you do still need to kind of match. Like, why are you reaching out to me? Why should I care about your email? You got me interested, but it felt a little heavy-handed too. Like, it's kind of like you waited a little long to get to the value of the email, right? Like, it's like, I'm probably going to stop reading when you're like, oh, you're talking about my name, whatever. I know the definition of my name, right? So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I was curious. And the reason I'm curious is, if you've been on the ESP side where it's like, hey, we're not doing cold outreach at all. Like, if you don't know or don't have a connection, this is a dead end. For me, when I read it, there's way too much room left for interpretation. Like just some of the statements, like, let me plant a seed with you. It's like,
about what? Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like you could have probably left that out and used a different closing line and potentially made the email work. I'm not adamant against cold outreach. I'm adamant against spamming people and spraying and praying, right? I think that there's value in reaching out in an intentional and an intelligent way, but that every avenue we come up with to communicate with our potential customers or reach the market, Americans are inherently lazy in what they want to do. They want to get right to scaling up and driving, you know, instead of sending 25 carefully crafted, intentional, I know a little bit about Lauren, I need to craft this in a way that's engaging, or even just saying, hey, here's some information that I think you would find valuable, right? Okay. Showing up with a gift of information or something that, hey, I saw this pepperoni pizza. Did you know that in New York City, there's over 35 million pieces of pepperoni pizza eaten a day? What? That's crazy. Where did you get? And here's an article I thought you might enjoy, right? Some way to start a conversation.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Versus showing up and saying, hey, I see you like pepperoni pizza. By the way, I have a taco stand and I want you to buy my taco. Like, it's like, too often the segue falls apart before the relationship is ever built. And what I'm curious about it, you know, I asked this question earlier, but it's, you know, you talked about people with coronavirus and people that were, would you say value? What was the word you said? You said value, I'm going to say projecting, but that's not right. It's
virtue signaling.
Virtue signaling. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. So you said they were virtue signaling. There are also companies that were virtue signaling, but were doing a really good job of creating a relationship or creating humanity in what they were writing. Why is it, in your experience, that some companies feel like we're talking to robots and some companies will send out a mass email and feels like we're talking to a human? One feels like a billboard and I'm just driving by, getting hit in the face with it in my inbox. The other feels like somebody actually slowed down enough for the CEO of X, Y, or Z company to reach out and say, Lauren, I'm talking to you specifically.
Yeah. I think the difference really is about knowing your audience and speaking to them about things that they care about. So, you know, I think I heard of some business who was kind of offering like, hey, you know, if you sign up for a demo with us, if you do a demo with us, we'll donate money to Toys for Tots. And so while I love the Toys for Tots and I love the idea of them donating something, it still feels very, very like self-interested for that business to say, hey, basically we just want you to get a demo with us, right? Whereas let's say if you're like a pet store, and you're saying, hey, you know, round up to the dollar for your purchase and we'll donate that money to, a pet, I don't know, something related to dogs or cats or whatever, right? Something that the pet lovers really, really care about, to, a local adoption facility or something like that. So I think it really is about pairing whatever the cause is with what your audience is going to care about and not just making it, again, all about you. Like, I think it just needs to be, it needs to be genuine. Like, people need to feel like you actually understand their needs. You have your own morals and values, and hopefully those are aligned. And so that's why they're reaching out to you and telling you about this great news. But I think that's the difference, is some companies are just kind of, you know, it's like one of those, if you're making your all of your workers come to work during coronavirus, and then you just throw a sign on the front door that says, our employees are heroes, like, that falls flat because you're still working your employees to the bone and not really giving them any way to stay safe during a pandemic or something. So I think it really is just about, letting whatever message you're sending out there, just be very true to who you are as a brand, and really just making it very, very, very clear that it really is something that's coming from your heart and not just meant to kind of drive attention and drive money towards your business.
Do you have examples that you've seen where you personally were just like, yeah, they really, like, they nailed this? I wasn't necessarily interested in the brand, or I wasn't necessarily looking to do business, but if I get the opportunity to, just because of how great of a job they did handling this particular communication or series of communications. I definitely want to pay attention to this company.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I can't think of any good examples right now because I feel like I've seen way too many. But one was, you know, like when the BLM movement was kind of at the forefront of all the craziness that happened this year. You know, there was this kind of talk that happened within our community, which is, you know, we have this term of blacklisting, right? If your IP or your domain could be blacklisted, and they were like, well, what's the origin of that? That seems like that could be insensitive to certain people. And so there were certain companies, and ConvertKit is one that comes to mind. Their leadership came out with a message that was like, look, we are going to change this. We're going to start using the term blacklist. There really isn't a huge difference between the two, but one seems like it might make people uncomfortable. The other doesn't. And everyone's very clear about the fact that these terms are very much the same. So let's just go ahead and change that. And so I like that it was, you know, it wasn't just, hey, we're doing this because everyone else is doing it, virtue signaling. It was very much like, look, we want to make a change, and we have already gone ahead and updated all of our documentation internally, and going forward, the whole company is using blacklist and all this stuff. And so it felt very much like, wow, we kind of learned something, and we decided to course correct accordingly. Not just a way to kind of bring in a couple of extra sales like that. I think they really thought about their audience and their employees, and they heard the feedback from everyone and decided to make that change because of that.
That's awesome. You know, it strikes me a lot like the email. Now, it was an internal email communication that was sent out, but the email that came out from Brian Chesky, the CEO of Airbnb. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, but on May 5th, they had gotten to the point with the shutdown and the quarantines and the stop of the travel industry, where they had to make some really hard decisions. And the way that Brian or his ghostwriter, whoever sat down and wrote the email, when you read it, you didn't feel like it was dire and doom and gloom and that Airbnb was going to go out, or, you know, they were being impersonal with how they were making decisions. They were very, very transparent. They were very, very, very thankful. And they shared with the world why they were making the decisions they were making and what it meant for the business, without ever making these people who were part of the cuts or the furloughs feel less than, or feel like they weren't part of the journey, or that they weren't employable. And to me, there was something, so I wasn't a big Airbnb fan before. Like I knew people that would use it. I was like, I don't get it. It's not for me. But on the backside of that email, it's like, I'm going to pay attention to Airbnb now. Because at the top, when it came down to choosing, do I make a business decision or do I make a human decision? Brian and team made a business decision that felt very human. It felt very humane and communicated it in a way where there was no guilt or shame to the people that were let go. They understood what was going on and basically sent them out the door with a glaring endorsement saying, if at any point we can hire them back, we will. If not, and you want them, take them. Like they're amazing people. And to me, there was just something about that just was very rich. And when it came across from the email, everybody else had been saying, in these challenging times, we're doing these things to protect our employees. It's like, I don't care what you're doing to protect your employees. How are you going to maintain my level of service? And the transparency from Airbnb helped me understand why they were making transitions, what that meant for the business, how it would impact me, how it would impact the market, but did it in a way where it's like, wow, here's a company that's not just virtue signaling, right? They're living and embodying what it means to be a company that loves its people, that cares about what's happening and is trying to be long-term viable. There's just something about that I found very, very, very rich.
Yeah. And I think that's the key is, you know, like whatever the subject matter is in that case, obviously bad news coming for companies, whether it's good news that you're sharing, I think the key is just to be heartfelt, you know, to be humane if it is bad news or if it's something that people aren't going to want to hear. And to be thoughtful, like, you know, it's one of those, like, I think that's the other thing is just some of this stuff just comes off so thoughtless. Like people are just speaking into a vacuum and they don't really think about how the person on the other side might receive that message and realize that those people might have different beliefs and values and maybe they're having a hard week or a hard year. So I think it's just a matter of, just really being you know, and that email is great because it makes you think better about the company because you're like, wow, they really were thoughtful and just care about their own people. And so of course they care about their business and they're being thoughtful in the decisions that they're making for their business. So that was a great email.
It was good. So look, we've talked about everything under the sun today as it relates to email. I'm curious, for an organization that's just fighting, like they're wrestling with email, like I can't get my hands around it. Sales hates it. Marketing can't figure it out. It just seems like a pain. What advice would you give an organization that's trying to get the most out of email and you know, what's 2 to 3, maybe 5 things that they could do to right the ship and get rolling?
Yeah, I think, you know, the key is to start small. Start wherever you have, you know, don't wait until you've got a huge list that you've built up over the last 6 months. You know, start small, let the audience kind of just build that audience, really learn from what's happening, right? So if you're just getting started, really dig into whatever metrics you have that help you understand, you know, if you have higher open and click-through rates on some emails, that's great, but also look at your negative metrics. So notice the campaigns that tend to drive the most unsubscribes, the higher complaint rates, things like that, because I think that's where like you're trying to optimize every part of your program. Really look at especially if you're just getting started, take some time to really consider what your goals are with email and then build your program out accordingly. Like I think a lot of times, you know, people are trying to kind of build their list really quickly with things like a sweepstakes or, you know, some other kind of lead magnet that gets a lot of signups, but like figure, you know, if you sell pet supplies, which I mentioned earlier, but you have this sweepstakes that has nothing to do with that. People are just looking to win like $1 million or a trip to Italy or something like that. You know, what's the point? Like why are these people going to stay on your list about pet products going forward, right? So really build an email audience, not an audience of potential buyers, but build it around, you know, and consider who your potential buyer is, consider what types of emails those people might like, but then build that list collection process accordingly so that you're growing it with people who are potential buyers and are going to like the email content that you're sending. You know, and I think that's one that people tend to miss a lot. And then set expectations as well. So you use a signup process. If it is cold emails, you know, honestly, do your best to try to get people to sign up, right? So if you have any kind of thought leadership, if you've got a blog, if you have webinars, get them to sign up first because then they are showing you intent. But even if you're sending cold emails, you know, it really is just important to drive the value, set expectations about why you're in their inbox, why you're in their face, what you're looking to get out of that, why you can provide real value for people. But again, especially when people are signing up, if you promise them weekly emails, don't start sending to them daily out of nowhere. You know, just really, you know, stick with those expectations. And if you're going to change things because you're new to your email program and you realize that's something you promised isn't going to work out, be upfront with your audience, right? Send them an email and let them know that you're going to change their frequency or you're going to change the content that they're going to send in, or you've got a new type of content that you think they might be interested in. Let them opt in to that. Use that as like a different mail stream or something like that. So I think it really is just about finding a way to respect the people that you're about to contact via email. Because I mean, yes, email is a massive place and my inbox is never going to be at zero. It's got thousands and thousands of emails in there at this point. But understand that people do have a finite amount of time in their day and they're looking to get value out of whatever emails they're sending. So, you know, make them laugh, make them cry in a good way, if that's what you're going for. But just give them something that's going to make them feel better about your brand and not just damage that brand presence that you have. And don't just send emails just to send email, right? Really, really focus on providing that value. Because if you're just hitting send because your boss said you need to send weekly, find something interesting to put in that content.
Well, and I actually couldn't agree with you more. So working with a company probably in the last 90 days, they changed their strategies as it relates to email. And they went from emailing ad hoc to emailing daily. And initially there was this influx and shock in the market, but the shock to the list was it wasn't that we told them what they were going to do. Like the emails were like, we've switched from ad hoc. You're going to get these daily. You can opt out right here. Hey, we get these daily. You can opt out right here. They had opted in because they had purchased from this particular company. But the thing that was really, really interesting is the guys that were doing this email program, they missed a day. So they were emailing every day, and then all of a sudden one Thursday they're like, oh, we don't have any content. So they waited till Friday. On that Thursday, four people emailed in and said, hey, where's today's message? Where's today's email? I was looking forward to getting, like, where is it? And when that happens, right, you realize that maybe it's not with, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, but there are people out there that if you're doing it right and you're being intentional, you're building a relationship with on the other side of that inbox.
Yeah, for sure. And you should treat those people differently than maybe the rest of your audience, right? If you have ways to identify within your email list, even just two segments, the people who seem to open, engage regularly, the ones who emailed you and said, hey, where's my email, versus the ones who really, you know, only open every couple of weeks or months, right? Just maybe send to them less, maybe send to them once a week instead of every single day. I think that's important for deliverability as well. Like, you know, especially with, if you're sending a lot of volume to Gmail, for example, Gmail cares a lot about user engagement. So if you're sending to people daily and they never ever see that they're opening and clicking, it's just kind of sinking further into their inbox. Eventually they're going to start sending that to spam. So you really do need to focus on those engagement metrics with certain types of you know, destinations you're sending to.
Sure. Makes perfect sense. One other thing, maybe in, you know, 1 to 2 minutes, what are things that marketers, organizations should be aware of on the horizon, whether it comes to legislation or changing in market? I mean, we just finished up an election, but, you know, we have the CCPA, we have CASEL, we have GDPR, we have canned spam. Are there other things that are coming as it relates to protecting that inbox that, you know, marketers and folks need to be aware of?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the legislation is changing. It's getting a little bit better, but I think that's, you know, legislation always tends to be pretty far behind the curve, you know, especially when we talk about canned spam in the US, which is the least strict, if you will. Don't set your bar at the level of what's legal. Go well above that, right? Really, again, focus on what's going to provide value to your subscribers. So I think, you know, going forward, it's going to be more, not to say more about segmentation. I think we have a lot of segmentation, a lot of automation in place already. So I think it should be going to be kind of using those tools responsibly. Like shiny tools are awesome. Automation is great. But if you're kind of losing that human touch within your email, I think that's something that, like, we're almost kind of getting to that exodus point where it's like, oh my gosh, we are to the point where we are treating everybody like a robot. So I think we're going to kind of have to step back from that. And I think this year has been really helpful in that, where you can't just be a robot and just hit send. You have to be a little bit more empathetic. And so I'd like to see, and I'm hoping that we'll see more of a shift in that direction where people are a little bit more responsible with email. My one fear is, you know, we've been hearing all of these comments about, you know, AI and using machine learning and kind of using that to have your segmentation going. But I think it's one of those, if you don't do that stuff right, you could be training your system with a lot of bias. You could be really, really kind of screwing up your email program. So I'd say, you know, just make sure if you're getting into that kind of more complex stuff with automation, make sure you have somebody who knows what they're doing and can plan it out. Like, I think, you know, marketing operations people are very well undervalued, very, very much so. So I'd like to see them get a little bit more of a light shine on them in the future. But I think, yeah, it really is just going to be about going forward. People expect they want personalization. I think there was a study recently, I think it's 81% of people said that they want more personalization. They're willing to give you information to get a more personalized experience. And about 50% of them, I think, said they're willing to pay for that experience. So, ask people what they want, right? Progressive profiling is really helpful in that sense. I see more of trying to kind of figure out what is it that my audience wants. But I think that's where, you know, we as recipients of email demand it. We demand to have things that are relevant, right? Like, I am a female and I'm married to a woman. So don't send me clothing options that are for men because I don't have a husband that I'm shopping for, right? So I think it's understanding your consumers in certain ways and then using that data to be helpful to them is where we're going. It's just a matter of how many eggs are we going to break on the way to getting there, to making that perfect omelet, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of omelets, that brings up food. And ooh, food brings me to my last question.
Okay.
Which is pizza.
My favorite. Yes.
Which the way I said it's more of a statement than a question. However, when it comes to pizza, if there was one piece of pizza that you could have, what would it be? Where would it be from and why?
Oh my gosh. Well, I am completely torn between two. So I'm going to have to give you two answers here. The first one, my favorite style of pizza is Neapolitan. And actually I was in Pompeii last October. And I had the most amazing slice of Neapolitan pizza. And honestly, I still dream about it. My mouth is watering right now thinking about it. So that would be the number one. And I think the key there was that they made the cheese locally within that region of Italy. And like just the ingredients were just super fresh and super amazing. So anybody that really uses fresh ingredients, I think is winning. But the other one is very different, which is I used to live in New York City for the past 15 years. And there was this place called Emmy Squared, which is Detroit style pizza. And if you've never had Detroit style pizza, please go try it because it's delicious. It's really good. It's like a square pizza. It's got like a kind of like a thicker crust, almost like a Chicago style a little bit, but it's light and airy, but it's also kind of like greasy and just it just sticks to your ribs and it feels really good. So there was this place that just had this awesome one that was pepperoni and a little bit of peppers on top. And then it had like a honey drizzle. So I think that one's got to be my go-to since I can't have it anymore, you know? So now that I'm in California, we don't get that out here.
That's awesome. Now I'm hungry because it's lunchtime here. So if people want to get a hold of you, Lauren, what's the best way to get a hold of you? Whether it's to chat about email, what is it? The validation for Kickbox or yep. just to discuss, you know, their favorite slice of pie. How do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, I would say the best ways are probably try to connect with me on LinkedIn or on Twitter, whichever one you prefer. I'm kind of leaning more towards Twitter these days. I think it's just a little bit more conversational. But find me on either of those. You know, if you want to book a demo for our new deliverability suite, feel free to kind of find kickbox.com and you can do that. But I'd love to chat with you about pizza or email or anything else really. So.
Awesome. Well, it's been great having you on the show. We've spent all day today talking about, you know, everything you know about marketing, not marketing, email. Everything you know about email is wrong. And really, we got into some interesting topics. So thank you so much for being a guest. You've been incredibly generous with your knowledge and what you've shared with us. Thank you.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you guys for listening. This has been another episode of the Summit Podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, follow, whatever you do. Just be a part. Come back next week when we got another great episode. I'm your host, Kyle Hamer. Thanks for listening.